Hello, listeners. Thank you for tuning into Iris today. This is the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, October 9th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Let's take a look at the weather forecast first thing, this coming from KCRG. Fairly consistent conditions are expected for the first couple of days of the work and school week before things turn unsettled later on. A frost advisory continues this morning until 9 a.m. for areas along and north of U.S. Highway 30. This is where lows in the mid-30s are most likely toward daybreak. The sunshine across eastern Iowa will begin to push our temperatures higher right away. The sun will be fighting against a generally cool air mass in place and a bit of the northerly and northwesterly breeze by this afternoon. As a result, expect highs today that fall a bit short of Sunday's warmer readings, only reaching the mid-50s to low 60s. Tuesday will be a similar evolution to our weather as today, with frost possible for all of eastern Iowa before temperatures climb back to the upper 50s to low 60s by the afternoon. Sunshine will be common again, with a bit of an afternoon breeze developing. Changes will take place by midweek and beyond, as the weather pattern turns active. Our first shot at showers and maybe a few storms comes on Wednesday, as a warm front sets up over southern Iowa. Along and north of this front, moisture will push in and lead to precipitation development. This slow-moving storm system will take a couple more days to move through the area, giving us an extended period of rain chances through Friday, and a few showers lingering on Saturday. Where exactly the storm tracks and where the warm front sets up will help determine who is in line for the heaviest rainfall totals. However, the chances of many areas receiving at least an inch of rain are starting to look pretty decent, with higher totals than that also possible. With the warm front generally near or to our south, we'll be on the cool side of it, and temperatures will be a little below normal throughout the end of the week. Highs will likely stay in the mid-50s through the early portion of next week, with lows in the upper 30s to low 40s after the storm system clears past the area. Now, to start off the week right, let's go directly to the sports page of the Courier. Now, here's a story where Ethan Petrick covers high school swim and dive. It's a sisterhood. Sister duos help Cedar Falls cultivate winning culture. And the story begins with a photograph of the high school women's swim team standing in the water in a crescent shape, and their names are listed below. Dateline Cedar Falls. The Cedar Falls girls swim team and dive team strive toward 4 goals each season. Then they are: have fun, work hard, be a family, and win championships. Tigers head swim and dive coach Chelsea Sizerback described the tenets as possibly a cause and effect nature, as the first three, have fun, work hard, and be a family, tend to lead to the last, winning championships. However, a unique roster makeup changed that equation slightly for the Tigers in the 2023 season, as they opened the year 24-3 in dual meet competition. 4 sister duos dot Cedar Falls lineup: Allison and Reagan Easter, Bailey and Tatum Lehman, Sophia and Emma Mason, and Viv and Val Nunez. Though she said she was surprised by the number of sisters on the team, having not considered it in the past, Sophia Mason said the familial ties possess a clear effect on the rest of the Cedar Falls roster. Quote, since they already have that kind of chemistry, because they are with each other all the time, the siblings, help with the whole team, Sophia said. When you interact with sisters, it's easier to get along with them because they are alike in a lot of ways, unquote. Be a family, check. According to Sizerback, The sister duos go beyond just helping the Tigers be a family, however. It has helped the Tigers to accomplish their other goals of having fun and working hard as well. That is the cool thing about having sisters on the team, according to Sizerback. Sisters can push each other in the pool during practice and competitions, but return home afterwards and love each other with no hard feelings. Quote, "They are sisters, right?" Sizerback said. "They have grown up together. They know how to push each other. Sometimes they know how to push each other's buttons, but that is just fine because what they really know how to do is help each other work hard." Quote, "I really love the competition, especially in practice, because, like I said, they can duke it out here, and then they can go home and have dinner together," unquote. The cool aspect of having a sister on the team that Sizerback described is exactly the approach senior Sophia Mason took when her younger sister, Emma Mason, joined the team 3 years ago. Quote, "I was just like motivating her to get on the relays with me because I wanted her to swim with me," Sophia said. "I also wanted to push her. So I was like, we can push each other without getting angry at each other. We are good practicing with each other because it does not matter if we get angry at each other," unquote. On Tuesday, as the pair helped pilot the Tigers to a 134-52 win over Iowa City High, Sophia's determination to push her sister was on display in the final event of the night. With the win in hand, the Masons helped put a bow on the night as the opening leg to both the Tigers' 400-yard freestyle teams. Both Sophia and Emma surged to the front and put the Tigers in first and second place out of the gate, spots which the Tigers maintained for the rest of the race. For Bailey and Tatum Lehman, who also competed with an older sister, Peyton Lehman, last season, the experience of competing on the same team as their sister is similar, though with a greater emphasis on the competitive nature of a sibling rivalry. Quote, "It is fun," Tatum said. "But then there are some aspects where it's competitive because, you know, I do not want to lose to my sister. In the history, she has tended to beat me. But it depends on the race," Bailey said. "Our coaches also try not to put us together for that exact reason. There is a little debate at home. But otherwise, it's all love and it's friendly," unquote. Have fun, work hard, check and check. Sizerback added that there also exists an advantage to being the younger sibling in the equation. Quote, "Any time that you can get wisdom before you experience something is going to help you be ahead," Sizerback said. "That has probably been a major part of it. Some of the girls on our team, they do not have a sister on the team now, but they have had a sister on the team. They just know what to expect. They know how things are run. They know the expectation of the Cedar Falls Tigers," unquote. Have fun, work hard, be a family, and win championships. Those are the expectations of the Cedar Falls girls swim and dive team. 1, 2, and 3 are out of the way. All that's left is winning championships. Next is a story about Caitlin Clark, and the category is college women's basketball. Iowa star guard Caitlin Clark is entering her fourth season at Iowa, and it may not be her last. The All-Star American and reigning National Player of the Year is unsure if she will declare for the WNBA draft following this season. Clark could opt to use her COVID season of eligibility that athletes were granted during the pandemic and play a fifth season for the Hawkeyes. Quote, "I'm going to know when I need to know," Clark said at Iowa's Media Day on Wednesday. Quote, "I think it's very similar to my college decision. It's like I'm in the recruiting process again. Quote, "It's really not something I think about every day or let weigh on me. I'm focused on helping this team be the best they can be. The biggest thing is, I'm just going to trust my gut. I'm not going to do a lot of research on what's better. I'm going to trust my gut and go with that," unquote. Clark led Iowa to the national title game last season before the club fell to LSU. she had a season for the ages by averaging 27.8 points, second nationally, while leading the country in 8.6 assists per game and 3-point baskets, 140. She also averaged 7.1 rebounds. Clark swept the Major Player of Year awards, including the Wooden Award and the Naismith Trophy. Clark also scored 191 points during the NCAA tournament, a record. She also contributed 60 assists. So, how much is there to prove at Iowa? Clark wants to win the national title and also just wants to enjoy a time in life that she will never again experience. Quote, time goes so fast, and being able to soak in every single second, I think that's how I'm viewing this, Clark said. A lot of these moments are going to be some of the best moments of my life. Quote, in recruiting, I knew there were a lot of good options, but in my heart, I wanted to be here. I think it's going to be the same when I make the decision to stay here or leave, unquote. The 6-foot Clark is highly popular in the state as a native of West Des Moines. She has received multiple NIL deals due to her popularity. She enters the 2023-24 season with career averages of 27.2 points, 8.0 assists, and 7.0 rebounds in 100 games with the Hawkeyes. She has scored 2,717 points and made 347 three-pointers. Now let's turn to the front page of the Courier for some more local news. Service above self. Cedar Falls veteran, University of Iowa dentistry student, named 2023 Tillman Scholar. And the article begins with a photograph of Cedar Falls native Zach Graham. Dateline, Iowa City. Zach Graham is committed to service above self. An Army veteran and third-year graduate student at the University of Iowa College of Dentistry, the Cedar Falls native has helped others in numerous roles: advocacy chair, legislative liaison, academic counselor. That dedication to others explains in large part why Graham has been named a 2023 Pat Tillman Scholar. Graham is one of only 60 United States service members, veterans, and military spouses chosen nationwide this year for the award. Quote, I feel truly honored to be selected, said Graham, the lone Iowa native attending an Iowa institution in this year's Tillman Scholar class. Quote, looking at the values associated with the Pat Tillman Scholarship and with Tillman himself, I want to live my life by those values. He's an inspiration to me. I feel an obligation to make an impact, unquote. Tillman was a member of the Arizona Cardinals NFL football team who left that career to become a U.S. Army Ranger during the War on Terror. He was killed in Afghanistan in 2004 while taking heroic measures to provide cover for his fellow soldiers when his unit was ambushed. Graham had designs on making the military his career, saying its values, honor, service, leadership, and teamwork, matched his. After graduating from Iowa State University in 2014 with a double major in anthropology and international studies and a minor in military science, Graham commissioned as an intelligence officer in the Army. He was stationed in Germany as the lead intelligence officer for the Army's aviation unit in Europe, focused on countering Russian air defense systems. Graham entered with the rank of second lieutenant and left as a captain. Quote, I commissioned the year that Russia initially invaded Ukraine in Crimea, so much of our focus was on the strategic defense of Europe if Russia continued their attack, Graham said. Quote, very pertinent now, unquote. But his father's unexpected death in an accident just 2 weeks after Graham married his wife, Mackenzie, caused him to reassess his goals. Quote, after my dad died, that led to a lot of introspection, Graham says. I saw people in my job 10 years down the line, and I wasn't seeing whether I would make the positive impact I wanted to do, unquote. A chance lunch encounter with an Army buddy led Graham to consider dentistry as his next move. Mark Lamborn, an on-base dentist, offered Graham the opportunity to shadow him while he extracted some molars. Quote, I thought, okay, sure, I'll come out and watch, almost as a favor, Graham recalls, holding a preconceived notion that dentistry was boring. A week later, he watched his friend in action. Quote, and it was like, boom, in 30 seconds. I knew this is exactly what I wanted to do, unquote, Graham said. You are literally having a direct impact with your hands. There is 0 degree of separation between you and changing someone's life, which is incredibly special, unquote. Graham's commander permitted him to shadow Lamborn weekly, where Graham witnessed the full slate of what dentists do. Quote, I got to really find out if that's what I wanted, Graham said. And every step along the way, that was a resounding yes, unquote. In August 2021, Graham matriculated into the U of Iowa College of Dentistry. He chose Iowa for several reasons. The College of Dentistry was one of the few in the nation that, at that time, offered every dental specialty. There were opportunities for Graham to do research, and his wife was a student in the College of Law. He has wasted no time getting heavily involved. Since March, Graham has been advocacy chair for District 8 of the American Student Dental Association, working to improve relations between student dental associations at 6 dental schools in the Midwest and their respective state-level dental associations. Quote, I'm working with dental students from across these schools to lobby for policies and legislation that positively impact dentistry and our patients' access to care, and build lasting relationships with their local dental associations, Graham said. He also was legislative liaison in the Iowa American Student Dental Association, representing Iowa dental students' interests at the state and national levels. That included lobbying national policymakers in Washington, D.C. on issues relating to dentistry, patient access to care, student loans, and the Ensuring Lasting Smiles Act, which would require insurance companies to cover medically necessary surgeries for people with craniofacial anomalies such as cleft lip and cleft palate. Graham earned the District 8 and 9 Legislative Liaison of the Year Award for outstanding success in organizing dental advocacy for his participation in the first joint Iowa Dental Lobby Day between the College of Dentistry and the Iowa Dental Association. More recently, Graham was appointed to the American Dental Association Strategic Forecasting Committee Public Professional Action Group, which deals with the strategic initiatives that improve the oral health of the public and advance the profession of dentistry. Quote, I am very honored to be one of the voices that will work toward this goal, said Graham, whose appointment was made by the ADA President George Shepley and the Strategic Forecasting Committee's chairman. Zach Graham follows in the footsteps of 2021 Tillman Scholar Jacob Shiloh, a U.S. Air Force veteran and current graduate student in the Department of Anatomy and Cell Biology in the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. Graham has been an academic counselor for veterans on campus, establishing the Math Platoon, in which student veterans get personalized tutoring from their service member peers. After his expected graduation in June of 2025, Graham hopes to enter a specialty program in endodontics, with Iowa as one of his targets. He says endodontics, the branch of dentistry concerned with diseases and injuries of the soft tissues inside a tooth, appeals to him in general because it is a crossover of medicine and art. The medical facet is about helping people through surgical procedures that restore or enhance patients' quality of life. Quote, nothing is better than Mother Nature for what's in your mouth, Graham explains. So as an endodontist, if I can save that tooth from needing to be pulled out, I can maintain their ability to speak, their ability to interact, their self-esteem, and to live a life without further dental complications, unquote. The art is about the precision and craftsmanship with not only restoring a tooth's function, but in matching the oral aesthetics unique to each individual's set of teeth. Quote, "You are really creating a sculpture in someone's mouth," Graham said. Graham learned about the Pat Tillman Foundation and its support of veterans while in the Army and researching dental schools. When he learned he won the award, he received congratulatory notes from many, including Teresa Marshall, professor of preventive and community dentistry and director of the student research program in the College of Dentistry. Quote, "The honor is so well deserved," Marshall wrote to Graham. Quote, "You are a scholar who represents their military peers in the best of light. You're also a great advocate for your military peers who have struggled in their return to civilian life. While it's an honor for you to receive this award, we are honored to have you at the college to remind us of the sacrifices our military men and women make daily for us," unquote. According to the foundation, its merit-based scholarships award an average of about $10,000 per academic year to each recipient. Graham said the money associated with the award means the least. Quote, "Really, it's about the network of like-minded peers who are driven by their values and what they believe in," he said. "It's not an award for what you have done. It's an investment into what you can do in the future," unquote. Next is an article titled, "Democrats Plan to Keep Their Leadoff Caucus Spot." Caucuses will be January 15th, with results released in March. Dateline Washington. Iowa's Democratic Party announced Friday it will hold a caucus on January 15th, but won't release the results until early March, attempting to retain their state's leadoff spot on the presidential nominating calendar without violating a new national party lineup that has South Carolina going first for 2024. Iowa Republicans have already scheduled their caucus for that day, which falls on the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. But while the GOP's caucus will kick off voting in the party's competitive presidential primary, Democrats will only meet in person then to participate in down-ballot races and deal with non-presidential party business. Democrats' presidential contest will instead be held by mail throughout January and February, with party officials not releasing the results until Super Tuesday on March 5th. Quote, "We believe this delegate selection plan is definitely a compromise," Rita Hart, chair of the Iowa Democratic Party, said on a conference call with reporters. Iowa's plans haven't yet been approved by the Democratic National Committee, but its rulemaking panel was planning to discuss the proposed changes later Friday during its meeting in St. Louis. Final logistical details are still being hammered out, but the change is part of a larger overhaul to revamp the state's Democratic caucus after 2020, when technical glitches sparked a meltdown that left the Associated Press unable to declare a winner. Iowa Democrats' new plan comes after President Joe Biden asked the National Democratic Party to change the traditional order of its primary and let South Carolina go first. He sought to empower Black and other minority voters critical to the party's support base, while suggesting that in-person caucusing, which requires participants to gather for hours on election night, discouraged turnout among low-propensity voters and should be abandoned. The DNC subsequently approved a new primary calendar for 2024, with South Carolina's primary kicking off voting on February 3rd, followed 3 days later by New Hampshire and Nevada, the latter of which plans to swap its caucus in favor of a primary. Georgia would vote fourth on February 13th, according to the plan, with Michigan going fifth on February 27th, before most of the rest of the nation votes on Super Tuesday. The issue is largely moot for 2024, since Biden is seeking re-election and faces no major primary challengers. But the DNC is again planning to examine revising its primary calendar for 2028, meaning what happens next year could shape which states vote early in the presidential nominating process for years to come. States with early contests play a major role in determining the nominee because White House hopefuls struggling to raise money or gain political traction often drop out before visiting places outside the first five. Media attention and policy debates concentrate on those states, too. Since the new calendar was approved in February, New Hampshire has rejected it, saying its state law mandates that it holds the nation's first primary, a rule that Iowa got around in previous years by holding a caucus. Georgia also won't follow the new order after the state's Republicans declined to move their primary debate to comply with Democratic plans. Democratic officials in Iowa, by contrast, have said for months that they were working on creative ways to preserve a first-in-the-nation caucus without violating new party rules. Hart said the National Party has assured the state Democrats that the new plans mean Iowa could again be among the first states in the 2028 presidential calendar, when the Democratic Party will be competitive and states going first will receive far more attention from candidates and the rest of the political world. Quote, "We know who our nominee is here in 2024. We know that President Biden is going to be our presidential nominee," Hart said. "What's really important is that we put ourselves in a good position for 2028, unquote. Jessup Hunter faces gun and drug charges. Story filed by Jeff Reinitz. Dateline Jessup. Authorities are pursuing federal weapons charges for a rural Jessup man who was found with guns and meth during a hunting investigation. A grand jury based in U.S. District Court in Cedar Rapids returned an indictment charging 60-year-old Douglas Gilbert Yucatil with one count of drug user in possession of a firearm. According to court records, Iowa Department of Natural Resources officers began investigating Yucatil in November 2022 after he was allegedly seen holding a crossbow and following an injured deer on private property. In April, DNR officials obtained a search warrant for Yucatil's home at 1251 175th Street and found 21 guns, meth, THC products, and a large amount of cash. He was charged in state court with identity theft and fraud for allegedly providing a Michigan's doctor information in order to obtain a special disabled resident hunting permit in 2016, 17, 18, 21, and 22. He was also charged with possession of meth with intent to deliver and cited for hunting with a vehicle and misdemeanor theft for possessing stolen trap tags that belonged to 18 people. Man awaiting trial in Cedar Falls gun accident detained in Wadena. Story filed by Jeff Reinitz. Dateline Waterloo. A Waterloo man who allegedly disappeared while awaiting trial for a December gun accident in Cedar Falls has been detained in Wadena. Authorities allege David Gerald Samuel Childs, 34, was found in a Wadena home with a .22-caliber assault rifle, meth, marijuana, pills, during a Monday search. He was charged with drug possession offenses and interference and weapons charges are pending, according to the Fayette County Sheriff's Office. Childs allegedly failed to show up for court in Waterloo for a misdemeanor reckless use of a firearm charge in September. The case stems from a December incident where he accidentally fired a 9mm Taurus pistol he was showing to a friend. The bullet struck a neighboring residence, but no injuries were reported. A warrant was filed following his absence from court, and on Monday, Fayette County Sheriff's deputies and Iowa State troopers found Chiles on East Water Avenue in Wadena. And now, listeners, we'd like to remind you that you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, October 9th, on IRIS, I-R-I-S, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and the Print Handicapped. Now, this announcement.
It only took Jeff one interview to land his job, one smile to get his wife to go out with him, and one time to risk it all by trying meth. Meth. Never, ever. Visit yourlifeiowa.org, brought to you by the Iowa Department of Public Health.
Now let's turn to the opinion section. Our first editorial today comes from the Des Moines Register editorial board, titled, English-Only Law for Voting Materials is Bad for Iowa. Brenna Byrd is wrong to defend it. Nothing reserves the right to vote to English speakers, but elected officials in Iowa doggedly insist otherwise, and their determination threatens to needlessly make voting more challenging for some citizens through next year's general election. To briefly recap, a state law enacted in 2002 provides that, quote, official documents shall be in the English language. Unable to leave it at that, officials including Steve King, then a congressman, and Joni Ernst, then a county auditor, successfully sued to bar election workers from providing voting material in other languages beginning in 2008. This year, a Polk County judge reversed that injunction, finding that multilingual election documents helped to secure a constitutional right. Leaders again had the opportunity to move on. The existence of forms in other languages will not hurt anybody who prefers English. The costs of translation and printing would not be onerous. And, more to the point, efforts to encourage participation in democracy through voting should attract praise. Instead, Attorney General Brenna Byrd and others are digging in their heels. Quote, we are appealing to the district court's decision against the Secretary of State's office to protect election integrity and defend state law, Byrd said in a written statement on August 30th. Brenna Byrd's comments are inaccurate and offensive besides. The appeal is in its earliest stages, so the state has not formally clarified that view. But, quote, protect election integrity and defend state law both deserve scrutiny. First, while its wisdom is suspect, the overall validity of the English Language Reaffirmation Act is not in dispute. The dispute is only over its application to election material, specifically, what things are subject to the law's exemption for language usage that secures rights in the federal and state constitutions. It's not as though the law was wiped off the books and the Attorney General is bound to defend the will of the legislators and governor whom Iowans put in office. This English language law will survive, regardless of how judges parse the precise contours of the constitutional rights exemption. Second, it is hard to understand the stated intention, quote, to protect election integrity, as anything but a thinly veiled implication that preferring to use another language is good cause to doubt a person's American citizenship. That's not true. Tens of millions of adult U.S. citizens speak a language other than English at home, according to census data. Many of those likely do know some English. Some proficiency is necessary for immigrants to pass a citizenship test. But citizens who were born here take no such test. And in any case, requiring voters to conduct their business in English serves no meaningful purpose. Services such as absentee balloting and taxpayer-supported voter registration drives exist to encourage people to participate. Reaching people through multiple languages should be no different. Besides being wrong, of course, the assertion is offensive. It nakedly reflects the same urge to exclude, quote, others that motivated the English Language Reaffirmation Act and this misguided court fight in the first place. It also baselessly invokes the specter of widespread voter fraud. Auditor wants to make information available, but state office stalls. The appeal will last until 2024. It might not be resolved until after the June 4th primary for congressional, legislative, and county offices. The final ruling in the initial case came too late this summer for election workers to respond for this year's city and school elections. Quote, "We're very hesitant to change anything at the last minute because usually those are the things that we screw up," Linn County Auditor Joel Miller said in an interview. "Ballots are already at the printer." Miller said his office would like to start providing forms in other languages and would appreciate help from the Secretary of State Paul Pate's office. Quote, "You provide the materials, the voter registration application, in Spanish and other languages, and hope that people engage in the process," he said. Pate's office said in a statement, quote, "We disagree with the court's ruling and have filed for appeal to see clarity now that this decision has added confusion to what was a bright line and clear legislative intent," unquote. The statement also said the Secretary of State follows federal law regarding non-English materials. It's certainly correct that the 21-year-old law continues to muddy what should be an easy decision. Make it easy for all Iowans to vote, including those who prefer a language other than English. The 2024 election cycle should be conducted with the Secretary of State and county auditors providing registration forms, ballots, and other documents in a variety of languages. If Pate, legislators, and other public servants believe in the, quote, easy-to-vote, hard-to-cheat mantra they often voice, it's not too late to drop the appeal and amend or repeal the divisive English language law. Lucas Grundmeier, on behalf of the Register's editorial board. Next is an editorial written by Randy Evans, and it appeared here in the Storm Lake Times pilot. "There is more to serving than winning elections." Back where I come from, you do not expect to have a bomb-sniffing dog circle your car when you pull into the parking lot for Sunday church services. But that is what occurred. After the dog's sensitive nose checked our car, a man from the front step gave us a quick once-over with his handheld metal detector. Then an usher directed my wife, our youngest daughter, and me into a pew in the second row of the sanctuary of the simple brick building with a thin spire. Of course, until that day in April 2011, I had never been to a church when a former president of the United States was teaching the Sunday school lesson. It is easy to become flummoxed, even for an editor who has conversed with presidents and quizzed many wannabes, when Jimmy and Rosalind Carter slide into the pew next to you. Memories of that morning at Maranatha Baptist Church in Plains, Georgia, were refreshed recently. On Sunday, the oldest former president in the United States history turned 99. 3 months earlier, on July 7th, the Carters celebrated their 77th wedding anniversary, a distinction that surpasses any other presidential couple. Too many of us judge our leaders simply by their political affiliations instead of their character. We expect those who lead to solve every problem that comes along. But even people who consider Jimmy Carter's presidency to be mediocre at best, surely would agree his post-presidency has been outstanding. Plenty of Republicans live in and around Plains, a farming community of 600 people, and they would verify that conclusion. The Democrat, known for his toothy smile, is beloved in Plains, despite his politics. After losing to Ronald Reagan in 1980, Carter returned to Plains, promising never to trade on his fame to enrich himself by joining corporate boards or giving speeches for fat fees. Instead, he was determined to make the world healthier, safer, and a better place for the downtrodden and the needy among us. That was why the Evanses were in Plains in 2011. After leaving the White House, the Carters began volunteering for what was then a little-known Georgia nonprofit group called Habitat for Humanity. It helps build and renovate affordable housing. The initiative was founded the same year Carter was elected president. Habitat now stretches around the world, thanks in no small part to the Carters. For 35 years, they devoted at least 1 week a year to building houses with teams of volunteers they inspired. By the time advancing age forced them to put down their hammers and take off their nail aprons in 2019, the couple had become the face of Habitat's volunteer force. Their week-long housing construction effort each year was called the Jimmy and Rosalind Carter Work Project. They and a combined total of 100,000 other volunteers have built 4,300 homes across the U.S. and in a dozen countries overseas, too. That was how Katie Evans, fresh from receiving her degree from Iowa State University, became acquainted with their legacy in 2008. She was part of AmeriCorps, the federal government's initiative that encourages community service and volunteerism. After Hurricane Katrina, she and other AmeriCorps team members were sent to the Gulf Coast. Habitat for Humanity's Carter Work Project was held there in 2008, and it attracted thousands of volunteers who came to build much-needed houses in communities devastated by the storm. Katie and her crew kept the volunteer builders supplied with construction materials. She marveled at the stamina of the Carters, then in their early 80s. She was impressed with their determination to make a difference for people whose lives were torn asunder by Katrina. 3 years after seeing the Carters in action, this kind-hearted Evans offspring moved to Americus, Georgia, 10 miles from Plains, and joined Habitat for Humanity's headquarters staff. When she was packing for Americus, I was aware the Carters sometimes dropped by the Habitat offices. I sent a note to Jimmy, telling him how impressed Katie had been with the couple's work along the Gulf Coast. I suggested he might welcome her to Georgia if their paths happened to cross at Habitat headquarters. Surprisingly, Carter sent a note asking Katie to call his secretary. That led to a telephone conversation with Jimmy and Rosalind, and then their invitation for Katie and parents to join the couple some Sunday for church. Now you know why we came to be seated next to the Carters in their pew at Maranatha Baptist Church on that pleasant spring morning 12 years ago. As he had for many years, Jimmy taught the Sunday school lesson that morning, too. He concluded it, as he always did, by asking everyone there to do one good thing for one other person during the week ahead. It might be calling a friend who was lonely, mowing the lawn for an elderly person, or taking a cake or cookies to a neighbor. Through one simple gesture like that, he said, people can help change the world. Whether you are a Democrat, a Republican, or an in-betweener, one of Jimmy Carter's fundamental principles should guide each of us too. Quote, I have one life and one chance to make it count for something, he said some years ago. Quote, my faith demands that I do whatever I can, wherever I am, whenever I can, for as long as I can, with whatever I have, to try to make a difference, unquote. Happy birthday, Mr. President. Here we have Art Cullen from the Storm Lake Times Pilot with an editorial titled Incompetence. This week's ouster of Kevin McCarthy as Speaker of the House again brings to the fore deep divisions between the radical right and establishment Republicans that have ground the people's business to a halt. McCarthy was barely able to keep the government open last week. That led Representative Matt Gaetz, Republican from Florida, to file his motion to vacate the chair. 8 Republicans joined Democrats to evict the California Republican, not even a year into the job. His election was historic on 15 ballots, and so was his demise as the first speaker to be voted out. This has been a long time coming. Speakers John Boehner and Paul Ryan resigned before they were fired by the insurrectionists. Government has come to a stop with a shutdown looming in just over a month. The House Republican caucus is ungovernable when 8 rogue members effectively control the agenda for the entire Congress. Representative Randy Feenstra, Republican from Hull, voted to retain McCarthy. It means that the farm bill, which was supposed to be done last month, will be delayed indeterminably. Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican from Iowa, suggested that we might have to settle on a 1 or 2 year extension of the existing 5-year farm bill, which was passed 2 years late because of the cantankerous Freedom Caucus fighting over food stamps, as they still are. Rural Iowa will be hurt by it. In a larger sense, it shows that the Republicans are not interested in governing. They are not serious about immigration reform, undone by the Freedom Caucus, or real border security. They are all about getting leverage on the politics of immigration, and so nothing ever gets done. That's not a strategy to win the middle, where elections are decided. The GOP looks incompetent. Meanwhile, the leader of the party, Donald Trump, has been gagged by a judge for berating a judicial clerk, and otherwise is preoccupied with 91 criminal charges pending trials in various jurisdictions. Despite all that, in Iowa, the Republican brand remains strong, and the party is fairly well united. There are divisions, but the faithful have generally fallen into rank behind Governor Kim Reynolds. The public gave her full control of the legislature and liked the idea of a $2 billion tax cut. She is promising even more tax cuts, while essential state services are eroding. The public does not approve of school vouchers or a 6-week abortion ban or ending the corporate income tax. One would think Democrats could make some hay from this field. Abortion is a live issue in the legislature. Everyone is anxious about our polluted surface water. Our roads are awful. Tuition keeps going up to learn a trade or a profession. Test scores are going down. In Washington, they can barely tie their shoes. At home, they can't deliver a farm bill or keep Schaller Crestland whole. Iowa Democrats are without money, a leader, or a message. They have no presence west of I-35. State Auditor Rob Sand, the only elected statewide Democrat, has started to criticize Reynolds. He appears to be in the early stages of shaping a gubernatorial campaign. Sand portrays himself as a centrist from Decorah who understands rural concerns. It appears that the public may want something with more of a populist tone, considering how voters in the 4th Congressional District respond to messaging. State Representative J.D. Scholten outperformed Joe Biden in the district when he ran against Feenstra. Scholten nearly unseated Representative Stephen King by running hard against a corporate consolidation. King won his seat and held it for 20 years by challenging the status quo. Scholten flipped the narrative. Republicans are showing their vulnerabilities. Nationally, Democrats have been wringing their hands over President Biden's reelection. Given the clown show in Congress and the fact that the leading Republican candidate could end up in jail, Biden's chances look pretty good. Too bad that Democrats in Iowa have not yet figured out a way to get into the debate. The 2024 cycle could set up a governor's race in 2026 that restores two-party government in Iowa. All it takes is money, a message, a leader, and a presence, none of which are at hand. And now from the New York Times, columnist Charles M. Blow, the ripples of Republican chaos. This week, Donald Trump delivered his version of a sad, tiny desk performance, hunched over the defendant's table in a New York courtroom, diminished and watching the illusion of power and grandeur he has sold voters, thin, and run like oil in a hot pan. He insisted on appearing in person at his civil fraud trial, apparently believing that he would continue to perform his perverse magic of converting that which would have ended other political careers into a political win for himself. His hubris seemed to consume him, persuading him that in matters of optics, he's not only invincible, but unmatched. He has done it before. In August, he scowled in his mugshot, a precursor to his Fulton County, Georgia criminal trial, summoning the allure of an outlaw, using the photo to raise millions of dollars, according to his campaign. But I think his attempts at cosplaying some sort of roguish flintiness will wind up being missteps. Courtrooms don't allow for political rally stagecraft. There's no place to plant primed supporters behind him to ensure that every camera angle captures excited admirers. He's not the center of attention, the impresario of the event. No, he must sit silently in lighting not intended to flatter and in chairs not intended to impress. Courtrooms humble the people in them. They equalize. They democratize. In the courtroom, Trump is just another defendant, and in it, he looks small. The phantasm of indomitability, the idea of him being wily and slick, surrenders to the flame like tissues in a campfire. The image was not of a defiant would-be king, but of a man stewing and defeated. The judge in the case even issued a limited gag order after Trump posted a picture of and a comment about the judge's clerk on Truth Social. Meanwhile, there's the historic ouster of the House Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, by members of his own party, for the unforgivable sin of seeking a bipartisan solution to keep the government open. In Greek mythology exists the story of Giantomachy, a battle between the Olympian gods and giants. According to prophecy, the gods could emerge victorious only if assisted by a mortal. Hercules came to the rescue. But in Republicans' version of this drama, McCarthy could have emerged victorious over his party's anarchists only if Democrats had come to his aid. None did. He was felled by a revolt led not by a giant, but by the smallest of men, not in stature, but in principles. The charmless Representative Matt Gaetz of Florida. Anyone who thought that Democrats were going to save McCarthy should have thought again. Ultimately, he succumbed to the result of his own craven pursuit of power. The rule that Gaetz used to initiate the vote to strip McCarthy of the Speaker's gavel was the rule McCarthy agreed to in order to get his hands on the gavel in the first place. Republicans are engaged in an intense session of self-flagellation. Does it also hurt the country? Yes. But in one way it might help. America needs to clearly see who the culprits are in today's political chaos and the damage they cause so that voters can correct the course. And the events of this week should give voters pause. The tableau that emerges from the troubles of Trump and McCarthy is one in which the GOP's leaders are chastened and cowed, one in which their power is stripped and their efforts rebuked. This is just one week among many leading up to the 2024 elections. But it is weeks like this that leave a mark, because the images that emerge from them are indelible. All the inflamed consternation about Joe Biden's age and Hunter Biden's legal troubles will, in the end, have to be weighed against something far more consequential. Republicans, obsessed with blind obeisance, a lust for vengeance, and a contempt for accountability, who no longer have the desire or capacity to actually lead. Their impulses to disrupt and destroy keep winning out, foreshadowing even more of a national disaster if their power grows as a result. How Republican primary voters respond to this Republican maelstrom of incompetence is one thing. How general election voters will respond to it is quite another. Waterloo listed among great cities for retirees. This story was written by Courier staff. Dateline Waterloo. Waterloo has been named the 6th best Midwest city for retired couples living on Social Security. The top 10 cities released by Go Banking Rates, a personal finance company. Go Banking Rates looked at the average rent in 2023 for a one-bedroom apartment through data collected from the Bureau of Labor Statistics 2022 Consumer Expenditure Survey, Apartment List, and Sperling's Cost of Living Index. The findings state that Waterloo has the lowest rent on the list at $740, a high livability score, and affordable transportation. Waterloo has a score of 81, according to Area Vibes. The score is determined by taking into account multiple characteristics, such as nearby amenities, commute, cost of living, crime rates, employment, health and safety, schools, housing, and user ratings. The livability score is then calculated out of 100 for city, neighborhood, or address. The best city named was Ames, followed by Dubuque, Fargo, North Dakota, Grand Forks, North Dakota, Ankeny, Waterloo, West Allis, Wisconsin, Lawrence, Kansas, Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and West Des Moines. And now, listeners, that's going to do it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, October 9th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Remember, you can access a recording of today's reading of the Courier or of the other newspapers around Iowa that we read. Just go to our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And we want to thank you for listening to your IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.